you want the audience, and this is always where the story should start as you're working at putting it together, is to be thinking, what do I want my audience to think, feel, know, or do as a result of hearing this story?
Where do we start this? And the answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls. I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Sell or Die. I'm so excited today.
Jen, you're so excited that the little thing that measures your recording is over the
really?
Middle line. Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's pretty cool.
I mean, you're
cool.
You're like rolling excited. I've never seen you this excited.
On a chart?
Actually, yes, I have.
Okay, all right. So, you should introduce yourself.
Oh, I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, the King of Sales.
All right. Well, howdy. I'm Jen Gluckow, author of Sales in a New York Minute, and this is Sell or Die. You are in the right place because today's episode is on fire. We have an amazing guest today. Her name is Kendra Hall. Mm-hmm. She wrote a book called Stories That Stick, mm-hmm. How Storytelling Can Captivate Customers, Influence Audiences, and Transform Your Business.
So when does this book launch, Jen?
September 24th, 2019, the same day as this episode launched. And guess what? She is going to talk to us today about some of the concepts from her book. Obviously, you can get all the concepts when you buy her book. But I've been tracking it. I follow her on Instagram, and I know that her book's been a number one bestseller for a long while now, just through the pre-sale. So I'm so excited for her for what's going to happen when this book actually like gets in the hands of people. But we got an advanced reader's copy, and let me just tell you, it is amazing.
Well, let me share an insight with you that's been one of the hallmarks of my presentations over the past 25 years. Facts and figures are forgotten. Stories are retold. And your job is to create a story around your boring facts, your boring figures, your boring product, and your boring company.
I think a lot of times people struggle with that story and how to get that story to relate to whatever it is that they're selling and be relatable to the customer. And so what's cool about, you know, this episode is that Kendra actually gives us a framework to think about when you're developing a story. So she's going to get into that pretty quickly within the episode.
And stories can be twofold. Number one, about your product, and number two, about lessons you've learned as a human being.
Mm-hmm.
Stories humanize your relationship with your customer. And there's a thing in storytelling called topper. When I tell a story about me or it, it makes you think of a story about you or your it.
Mm-hmm.
If I tell a story about my kids, you think of a story about your kids. If I tell a story about my car, you think of a story about your car. And you want to get the customer to tell you their story. That means that your story was interesting enough to continue the conversation. Like it struck a nerve, a thought nerve in their mind that allows you to hear their story as well and connect even deeper, further, better, faster.
Yeah, and I love that, Jeffrey, and I would top that if I could, but I'm not going to try.
Okay, good.
But the one other thing you guys need to know before we get into this episode is you might be thinking, like, I don't need stories. I need more sales. Well, Kendra is going to tell you how telling your story is actually going to help you close more sales, exceed your quota, make more money. So it's time. Let's get into it. Kendra Hall.
Diehards. Our guest today is Kendra Hall, a professional storyteller, a nationally known speaker, and author of the new book, Stories That Stick, How Storytelling Can Captivate Customers, Influence Audiences, and Transform Your Business. Now, I'm challenging you that this woman is actually an expert at storytelling, and she's going to reveal some of the secrets that will help you connect more with people, engage more with people, and inspire more people. I've just thrown down the gauntlet and given her the challenge of the decade.
I know.
Please welcome Kendra.
Hey.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me, you two.
Yeah, thanks for being here. So how did you get into storytelling?
That is a loaded question. You know, I actually told my first story when I was 11. It was an assignment for fifth grade. We had to choose a children's book and then go read the book to a third grade classroom. So I chose the book, The Giant's Big Toe. Yes, it's an American classic if you haven't read it.
It's on my shelf. I have an autographed copy of
it. It is. You should definitely get it. But I remember walking into the third grade classroom. I had my book in my hand, and it was right at the end of the day. It was right before summer vacation, and it was pure chaos in that class. And like kids bouncing off the walls. The teacher was just waiting for the bus to come. So when I got in front of the room, it was my turn to read the book. I actually decided just to put the book down and tell the story of the giant and his big toe. And it only took the first few sentences, and I held those third graders in the palm of my hand, right? And I knew. I was 11 years old. I knew I was on to something. So that's really where it all started for me. Yeah.
Were you in New York at the time? Did you grow up in New York?
Nope, I grew up in Minnesota, rural Minnesota. Our nearest neighbor was like a mile away. So very rural. Yeah.
And so then you became a national champion storyteller. Is that really a thing?
Come on.
It is. I know. It sounds like a story in and of itself, which, side note, I say all of your stories should be true. The best stories are true stories. So let's just put that out there. Then I joined the speech team and was very popular, just like all the speech and debate kids are. and then there was a national storytelling competition. Another speech coach from a different team knew about it, recommended that I submit a tape. And so I did. I went to the contest. I won. I thought the grand prize would be like a college scholarship or a new car. It wasn't. It was that you got to tell stories at the National Storytelling Festival in Jonesboro, Tennessee.
Oh. Yep.
All you had to do was get there.
All you had to do, which it's not easy to get there, by the way. It isn't. Yeah. No, it isn't easy to get there. But I went with my mother because at this point I was about 17, 18 years old and wasn't really traveling by myself. But really that is, you know, we have all these points on our journey. And this was another one of those points. I was sitting at this festival in Jonesboro. You know, if you measure towns by stoplights, they don't even have one. But the first weekend in October, 15,000 people flood this town. I mean, it's huge. It's a huge.
Wow.
I love that.
They put up these enormous circus tents. They squeeze in white folding chairs that are like half the size of a normal folding chair just to get everybody in there. And they bring in nationally renowned storytellers. And I think this is an important thing to note. So I came to storytelling not from business, right? Like I didn't come like, oh, storytelling's a great sales tactic, or oh, you should be using storytelling in your marketing materials. I came from a festival in Jonesboro, Tennessee, where I got to watch these incredible tellers who, without agenda, without any promotion, were just on stages with nothing but the power of their narrative. And that's really where I got to see what a great story looks like, what it sounds like, what constitutes a great story, and the power of even small stories to connect big audiences.
Do you have a particular way that you start a story? Like if when I think of story, I think once upon a time. There were three bears and
yes, I always start my story with three bears. Yeah. Very important. My number one storytelling tip. You know, it's funny that you ask that because I recently went back through and read the book for the audio version. And as you're reading your book, you start to dissect.
Oh, yeah.
Writing,
oh, yeah.
Right?
I should have said, I should have done it this way.
I could have done this. Yeah.
You see, I'm sure there's points in the reading where I like trail off in my head and I'm thinking exactly. But one thing that I did pick up as I was reading it back is I often start my stories with a a particular moment in time. So I will say it was several years ago. I will say it was a Tuesday afternoon. I will start stories by saying, you know, I'll never forget the day. Just having these, and this is something that I recommend for people as you're incorporating story into your pitches, into your presentations. It's this way to show them, your audience, that now we're transitioning into a story. And it's a way to trigger their minds to say, oh, I should listen to this. So a specific time, a specific place, even a specific character. Sometimes I start right there. And it's a signal for the listener to know that they're moving into a story.
But you never say that reminds me of a story.
No, never.
Right. That's too easy. A lot of people do.
You know, and I suppose you could, like, that is...
I want to scream bullshit when they say that.
Exactly. And yeah. And that's like, if you are, so here's the thing. If you're just getting started using stories, and that transition into the story is often the hardest part, and people, and it keeps them, it becomes an obstacle that keeps them from using stories. My bigger objective is that you are using stories. So if you're just getting started, then fine. I give you permission to say, and you know what? That reminds me of a story. But then your goal is to get better. No, he's shaking. No, you don't even. So we'll disagree on that. But again, you shouldn't. You can use that once or twice, and then it's time to grow up. And
that's
and
fair. I feel like if you have to tell them that you're going to tell them a story, then you've defeated the purpose of telling this. Like of using a story to tell them what you want to say.
Right.
Exactly.
I'm going to throw something at you. You critique it and tell me if I'm full of shit or not. Is that fair to say? Okay.
Yes, you are.
Thank you.
Oh, wait. Oh, you want to? Okay, no, go ahead.
That was the New York part. Give me the Jersey part. I grew up in Haddonfield, New Jersey, and we lived on the corner of the busiest street in town. And we had a dog, a little puppy. The dog's name was Thingamajig. We shortened it to Thing. And every morning I went to get the paper, and the dog would follow me to the door. And one morning, the dog got loose and ran out into the street on the busiest street in town. And I don't know whether you know it or not, but in New Jersey, you get extra points if you hit the dog.
Oh, no.
All right. So do you understand where I'm going with that? But I found that too many people tell stories that are too damn long. Mm. So from that point on, that story's over in a minute.
Yeah.
I don't want to tell a 5-minute story.
Well, you said that when you were in this festival thing with 15,000 other storytellers, that you picked up on the best way to tell a story. So what are the components that make up a great story?
Yeah, and that's a great question. And I think that time is actually a secondary factor. If you have these other, if you have these components in the story, if you can fit these components into a story in 1 minute, then there you go. If you have time and permission for a 5-minute story, then there you go. But there are 4 key components, and I heard a few of them right there in the dog story, that really make a story more compelling, more engaging, more persuasive. And these are the components that we actually studied. So one of them is having an identifiable character. Where stories go wrong is they stay too vague. Our ultimate objective with storytelling is to engage our audience in what I call the co-creative process. So that as you're telling the story, they are picturing their version of the story in their mind. And the better you are at engaging them in that co-creative process, the more compelling, more influential your story will be, because they'll break down their walls. They'll just go with you in the story. So the first way to do that is with identifiable characters. They need to be able to see a person, or in this case, to see the dog. And even getting so specific with not only the name of the dog, but then shortening the name of the dog and giving us that nickname. I never had a dog, but I'm picturing this thingamajig dog running around, right? Yeah. I'm sure you're picturing the same thing.
Yeah.
So where stories go wrong is we don't have there isn't a character to think. They talk about maybe a company, or they talk about maybe, and so we don't get to engage in that co-creative process. So that's, and these are in no particular order, but having an identifiable character is important. Second component, again, in no particular order, is authentic emotion. You want to feel, there wants to be feeling. It can't just be this happened, this happened, this happened, this happened. One of the great benefits to a more persuasive story is to have your audience feeling what the emotions are within the story. And this works extremely well when it comes to sales. I've worked with companies who are trying to sell customer service, but how do you sell customer service to somebody where they don't understand how important your customer service is, or what a vital role that is, or how good your customer service is, or what that will mean in their lives until after they say yes to you? But you need that as a reason to say yes to you. So in those moments, using stories, you can include the emotion of perhaps a company or a client who was with a different company, hired somebody else, and experienced the pain of bad customer service, of somebody not being there when they needed them. So that authentic emotion needs to be in your story. So that's two. Three is a moment, a place, a time, a setting. We saw that in your story, right? You are on the busiest corner in New Jersey, right there. I pictured, now I've never been to the busiest corner in New Jersey, but I pictured a really busy street corner where, actually what I pictured was the street corner where my grandparents' house was in St. Paul, Minnesota, because that was the street corner where I always heard, be careful not to go in the street, be careful not to go in the street, mm-hmm. right? And so I'm picturing this street corner that doesn't look the same as your street corner, I'm sure. But because you gave us that specific place and painted the picture a little bit on that moment in time, it made the story more engaging and encouraged that co-creative process. And then lastly, the fourth component is specific details. And again, the ultimate goal is that co-creative process, to have them fall into the story. So the more specific you can be about the details you include, the more they will engage. Now, one of the great benefits and one of the ways you can use specific details in your stories for sales is, my guess is you know your potential clients really well. You know who they are, you know where they come from, you probably know like what their desk looks like or what their patterns are. So these are, you can flex your customer understanding muscles through specific details without having to say, I know you really well, or I really understand what your pain points are. You can say what they are through the story. If you know that they're working late hours in a fluorescently lit boardroom and they always have to order in Chinese food from the best Chinese
right, Walk 88, not to give them any kind
exactly.
of a promo, right?
give them a plug. But you can include the white boxes filled with fried rice and show that you really understand who they are, what they struggle with those specific details. So
some
there you
people
go.
Can use chopsticks, some people can't.
Not with rice, I can't.
Yeah, I don't like it with rice either.
No, it's the only way I eat it. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so you were a director of marketing and VP of sales at a large firm, and you just like talked about a little bit how those stories can play a role in your sales, but I'm curious, how did you incorporate them into what you were doing at that firm?
Yeah, so it was a product-based company, and it was actually during the recession, which was a difficult time to be in charge of sales.
Difficult charge to be in time of anything.
Yeah.
Anything. Yeah. But what we did, it was and there was still some marketing involved, but what we did was really, what I did was to really start doubling down on, I identified, you know, a couple key issues. There were morale issues. And so, you know, in my role, I noticed that there was a lot more focus in my trainings, for example, a story focus that also then was an uplifting, hopeful morale, like let's lift morale in terms of a sales, like, hey, we can get through this. And then in terms of, you know, there was a value challenge there. People were saying no based on price. And, you know, that's a common objection is the price. And there were several different ways of doing that to say, well, if you do this and you get that, then it actually ends up costing less than if you were to blah, blah, blah. That's one way that you can go. But for us, what we really needed to do was tell the story of the value of these products in people's lives. And of course, like sales didn't soar, but we stayed above water, if you will, by doubling down on the value of the stories or the value of the product.
Let me throw something in. I did a seminar for a drug company, and I planted this whole process where the rep comes in and he describes the drug because it's an antidepressant drug, and it tells him all the qualities, the medical qualities and all this stuff, and da da da, and then asks if the guy wants to make a prescription. And then I had a woman stand up who took the drug, and it worked. And she described her old life and her new life, and the entire audience bought that story, not the drug.
Yep. Because we don't buy the drug. We buy the story of what it will mean for
us. You buy the outcome. Right.
Exactly. Exactly. That was good. Nice work on that.
Yeah, that was great.
So, they paid me a lot of money. I had enough time to do it. So yeah. Doesn't the story end with a point like Aesop or Fable or, you know, tell a story, make a point?
I think that, I mean, if we're talking about strategic storytelling, which is usually the approach that I'm taking, certainly there's a time and a place just to tell stories for fun at happy hours or out on the baseball field while you're watching Little League. But in terms of stories and business, there's a point. You have an objective. You want the audience, and this is always where the story should start as you're working at putting it together, is to be thinking, what do I want my audience to think, feel, know, or do as a result of hearing this story?
As the king of sales, I meet a lot of salespeople. And one major complaint that I have heard more now than ever is that selling has stopped being fun. You dread going on a sales call with a lead instead of feeling excited about it. You expect the worst when you see an email from one of your prospects or customers. And instead of feeling pumped about your product, you can't wait to get in the car and drive home. Is that you? Let's get rid of self-blame for just a second. It wasn't your fault that there's a myth that successful salespeople are born, not made. If your career in sales has stopped being fun, then you are responsible for redefining what that career looks like to you. You have to decide what you want to be and how you want to get there. I'm just offering you the tools to make it better and to make it happen. So why not try my 7-figure sales formula? I'm inviting you to give it a shot and make it count in your bank. Go to cgittimer.com, cegittimer.com, and I'll see you in September. So you tell the story, and then you get to the part where there's the poignant part, either the punchline or what's the point of the story or what was the outcome or did they live happily ever after or did the guy die because he fell over a cliff? So there can't just be there has to be an ending, correct?
Yeah. And I think that I think one of the best endings that you can give, it's the ending. It's drawn from the beginning. It comes from the beginning of the story. So for example, one of the, a story that I worked on with a builder, and I think they're featured in the book, as a matter of fact. He tells a story about his love of building and that he didn't become a builder. He was born a builder. And while all of his friends were playing with G.I. Joe and playing sports, he was actually building forts in his backyard. And he would say, cool. You know, at the end of each day, I remember sitting on the roof of the fort, looking out over the horizon and wondering what I would build next. Mm-hmm. So that was at the beginning of this story. And then he goes into, because it's a business story. So he goes into what his company offers and what they're all about. But then as we come to, and it was done in video form, he's also used this story in presentation form as well. But at the end of the video, we came back to that story. And the end of it says, you know, sometimes I'm driving home from a site visit and all of the incredible things that we built. And as I look out over the horizon, I can't help but wonder what we will build next.
Ooh.
Now, so here's the thing. You have two choices when you're ending your story. You can end very explicitly, which I think is as rookie as saying, I will now like to tell you a story. I don't think you need to explicitly say, I sure hope I can be the next, I can be the one who builds your next house. You can use that call to action as implicitly. And so he says, I can't wait. I can't help but wonder what we will build next, which essentially is an invitation to have him build your next home. And there was actually a story behind that story because we put the video together. It was great. And that day after filming, he actually had a huge sales pitch to go to. And since he had just told that story, he decided to change up his presentation and open with the story of building the forts. And he got the job.
That's cool. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, he said it was because they loved the Ford story.
And so it sounds like so we've done some research and you have four types of stories. It sounds like that's a founder story.
You're right. It is a founder story.
Yeah, we're into
tell
this,
us huh? about the founder story and then what the other types are.
So the founder story is really the story of where it all began. It's where did the idea come from? What inspired the company to be created? It's really that beginning. It's that beginning story. And it's a great tool to use for differentiation in the marketplace. Like for this builder, for example, anybody could say that they build high quality homes and that they use the latest technology, but the audience, his, you know, potential client, felt something about mm-hmm. his love of building because
sure.
he used that story.
Yeah, yeah, and it created faith in them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You can build, which I think is, you know, trust, relationships, like faith is such an essential. It's like that thing, that X factor that mm-hmm. You're really trying to get at. And a story gets you there.
And so what are the other types of stories that our diehards should be thinking about when they're writing out a story bank?
The next story is the value story. And the value story is exactly what it sounds like. It's a story that's used to communicate the value of what it is you have to offer, of your product or your service. Those are the stories of what you do making a difference in people's lives.
So rather than saying like, well, here's the value you're going to get, you yeah. might tell a story about Mary who used your products and this is what she got. Is that
yep.
how you would do it?
Yep, absolutely.
Second type was that, now third type.
Is the purpose story. And the purpose story is more an internal or like a leadership story. When you have those big messages that you have to deliver. Maybe you're leading a team and you have Monday morning meetings and you really want your messages to resonate. You want to connect with the people that you're leading. You want them to know you as a person. Those are purpose stories that you can align teams around an initiative or an objective. And then the third type of story is the customer story. And this is kind of, usually customer stories are used to illustrate the value, right? So they're not mutually exclusive, but a customer story is kind of the next iteration or the more powerful version of a testimonial or a review. This is where your customers, the people who love what you have and love what you do, are able to express the change you've made in their lives through the power of their stories.
Are there specific questions you ask to pull the story out of the customer?
Well, to get your customer stories, the success of a customer story is entirely based on the questions you ask. So just saying like, hey, did you, you know, give us a thumbs up or five yeah. stars if you loved our work? Instead, when trying to get customer stories, you need to ask them questions that will guide their responses. Not guide their response in terms of making them say that they like you when perhaps they didn't, But the storytelling framework that I outline in Stories That Stick is really three parts. You want to talk about the normal, what they were experiencing before, what they were hopeful for, what they were struggling with, to add in those characters, the emotion, a specific moment, and the details. Then the explosion is the second part, which is the thing that happened. And typically in a customer story, it's the day they found you. It was when they first tried your product. And then the third part of a story is the new normal, what they experience now. So to get great customer stories where they often go wrong is those stories start in the middle. I started using ABC product and now I feel great. Well, future customers don't believe that. They don't care about that. So you have to ask questions.
You have to start by saying, I used to be ugly. Are you ugly? Are you experiencing ugly when you look in the mirror?
You could be ugly. Exactly. Yeah. You got to get the normal. You got to get the before, really.
Yeah.
So, oh, Jeffrey.
Okay. So I want to finish my story.
I want you to. Okay. I was hoping you would.
About Thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
So Thing gets out and runs out into the street. And of course, I panic and run after because Thing's a puppy. And she gets across the street safe, and I get across the street safe, and I chase the dog for about four blocks, and I had to give up because you can't chase a puppy and win. So I decided to run home, get my dad. We'd go and get in the car and go out and find the puppy. So I run home. I go, Dad, dog, and we hit car. And my father, very calm, he goes, okay, son, we'll get in the car. I spin around to go get in the car, and I take one step, and I trip over the dog. The minute I started to run the other way, the dog chased me. And so I say to the audience, chasing your customers too hard? Some of them running away from you, not calling you back, not responding to your emails. Maybe you need to figure out a way to have the customers chase you. And that's what this talk is about today.
Love it. Love it.
And so and actually that is based on a 100% true story.
Love that even more.
Huh? Yeah.
I mean, that even more.
When I tripped over the dog, my father was howling his ass off. And you get the point, you know, it was a lesson, not just a story. It was a transferable, understandable lesson when I said, are you chasing your customers too hard? Some of them running away, some of them not returning your calls. And when I realized that I had that story, and that I could convert it into sales, I opened with that story for years.
Yep.
So I think a lot of us have those stories in us, but people struggle with how to pull them out. Like, there may be someone else who has a similar story, but they're not thinking about it or even remembering it in a way that makes it a story. And so if you're a salesperson and you're wondering, like, but where are my stories? I grew up too. What about? Yeah. How do you figure out what experiences are stories?
Yeah, that is the ultimate question, and that's again one of those stopping points or those obstacles that keep people from telling their stories. So there's two things that I would say to that, and number one is to go small. I think when we start thinking about our stories, we try to look for these really big moments. Maybe they're big triumphs or big tragedies. But the reality is that story about your dog is an everyday occurrence. But that's the strength of it. That's the strength of it, is because we've all lost a pet, or we know what that looks like to be, you know, trying to chase something we can't quite get. And that was a very small moment. I open a lot of my keynotes with a story about a physics paper that I handed in 12th grade. And let me tell you, that story is a very small moment in my life, but does so much good, creates, you know, does so much of the work for me for the rest of the message that I need to give. So don't only think about going really big. You can look for really small moments. Now, I know that being said, so how? How do you look for small moments? So let me give you one little tip that can help. And that is, our stories attach themselves to the nouns in our life. The people, the places, the things, the events. And so if you really don't have a story in mind, let's say you have a message. Let's say you know that you want to deliver the message that you need your customers to be chasing. Your problem in sales is that you're chasing your customers. We need to turn that around. And you're like, what story do I have? One place to look is to make a list of nouns. So you can make a list of, you know, the places that you've, now this takes more work. And I feel like that's important to say. Strategic storytelling, using story well, it takes work. And that's where most people give up, is they're like, they're expecting these stories to just be sitting in front of them. And sometimes they aren't. And it takes a little bit of work to find them. But make a list of the places that you've lived. Like if you had made a list of places that you'd lived and you had that early house, that house on the busiest corner, that story might have come back to you by making a list of those nouns. Make a list of influential people in your life, coaches, family members. Make a list of your pets. We learn a lot of lessons from the people and the pets, if you will, in our lives. Make a list of the jobs that you've ever had. Like, what was your first sales job? Think about that. Like, for me, I know I had to sell myself as a babysitter. Now, there are little moments in that experience that could be sales lesson stories. So pay attention to the nouns. And then as you list each one down, pay attention to the memories that come back to you. Some of them may be stories that you can use.
I'm going to throw something at you, and I think this is pretty important. I was taught by Elizabeth Jeffries, a woman in the National Speakers Association. She said, Jeffrey, go back to the house that you grew up in and picture yourself in each room, and stories will occur to you.
Exactly.
And that was like an unbelievably powerful piece. And then I created something that said, what was the most embarrassing things that ever happened to me? And those are self-effacing stories, which make the audience realize you're like an okay person. You're kind of a human being. But I just created a series of videos called The 5 Best Sales I Ever Made. Mm-hmm. And they're all stories.
Yep.
About how that sale happened. And one was like the smallest moment on the planet when I was selling Encyclopedia Britannicas, and I completely failed at it my first day.
Well, don't give away the story.
I know.
You can only get it if they get the...
Right. So if you want this, just go to the show notes.
Oh, man.
But it is. Like, the smallest moment really can make the biggest difference. And the truth is, the best stories are the ones that people can relate to, the ones where the people can see themselves in that story. So the better you are at stories that relate, the better you will be at sales, period.
Interesting to me, Paul Hommely, a guy who was a great storyteller, he said, Jeffrey, when you tell a good story, it reminds the other person of their story. Mm-hmm. And they want to tell you immediately, mm-hmm. like they have in sales, it's called a topper.
Mm-hmm.
And well, that happened to you. Well, let me tell you what happened to me.
Exactly.
When the hurricane came, I lost my boat and my house and I had to swim to the shore for 3 miles.
Well, and that's an important, because isn't another important element of sales really getting to know the person you're selling to? And there's no better way of getting to know someone than getting to know their stories.
But it is
extremely awkward to say to someone, so tell me your story.
Right.
And then just stare at them. Like, you can't, you're not going to get anything. But one of the phrases that I use, one of the like foundations of my belief, is that just what you said, story begets story. So what if you want is their story, so you can get to know them better, you're going to have to tell a story. And then as you tell the story, when you know that it's working, they'll share their story in response. And then you get to know them.
I love it. This has been amazing.
No, you're amazing.
Diehards, you got to get this book, Stories That Stick. We have our copy, but you need yours.
Diehards, get the book because it will teach you how to understand the power of the story, not just what the story is. And I think that's really important in terms of connecting with someone and being able to transfer a message. And this book shows you how to do that. So Kendra Hall, you're cool, and thank you
so much.
Thank
you for being here. This is awesome.
Thank you so much. This is great.
Okay, that was a hell of a thought-provoking interview.
Mm-hmm.
And I will guarantee you diehards that you were thinking of, well, what story should I tell? Where should I go? What should I do? The first tip I'm going to give you about this entire interview is buy the book and study it. Because the story will form the foundation for your overwhelmingly amazing presentation, your emotionally engaging presentation. And I promise you, it will take a little while to master, but I also promise you, your sales will increase, if not double, when you start to use stories as the basis of your proof rather than facts and figures.
Yeah, I've started to tell more stories on my Instagram posts. And I'll get into that in a Woman Crush Wednesday episode more detailed. But I've started to tell more stories rather than just lessons or thoughts and ideas. And the last six posts of mine are all stories. And the engagement on them is, I want to say, 60% to 70% higher than engagement on my previous posts. Now, engagement can lead to better connection, which leads to getting people into your direct messages, which leads to sales, you guys. So it's all about making someone want to engage with you, whether it's on Instagram or in person when you're giving a presentation.
Once upon a time has been converted to once upon a brain. And I think that once you see that, you're going to get the potential impact of this to you, to your family, to your coworkers, and to your customers.
So we have a copy of her book here, you know, and I was looking at some of the chapter titles. Oh my goodness, they're hysterical. So it was Once Upon a Brain, Story Hacking the Nervous System to Captivate, Influence, and Transform. And then it goes to What Makes a Story Great and Beats Puppies and Supermodels Every Time. And then you have
chapters. I'm telling you, puppies
are freaking awesome. And it's like you want to read more, you know, all the way down to like, what's the founder story? How entrepreneurs use story to attract money, customers,
just
and talent.
Just buy the book, read the book once, and then study the book. Then put it into practice by creating your own stories. I said in this interview, go back to the home that you grew up in and picture yourself in each room, and you'll come up with stories. But think about things that happened, experiences that happened in your life, the good things, maybe a couple of tragic things. Create memories for yourself and document them the minute that they occur to you. Don't just think of a story. Document the story.
Yeah, and I can almost guarantee that something is happening to you that's worth telling every single day. There is a story.
I remember the time the police came to my door.
You do? When was that?
When I hadn't paid a ticket in Clementon, New Jersey.
Okay, now that's like a really intense story, but I'm sure, like, Jeffrey, today there were other things that happened in your life, okay, that are worth documenting and worth telling. And so if you go about your day thinking about, at the end of the day, what was the best thing that happened to me today, or what was the coolest story I can tell about today, and just get in the practice of writing it down every single day, by the end of a year, you're going to have more than 300 stories to tell.
Document the story immediately. This one is now recorded. I can't wait. And there's more stories, and we want to hear your stories, diehards. Come on, put them up online.
Tell us your stories. Right. DM us on Instagram or post something on LinkedIn in the when we advertise this show. But tell us a story that's worth hearing.
A video. Post a video about your story, 1 or 2 minutes, not like...
All right, post it in the Seller Diehards official Facebook group, and we will watch it. We'll be so glad to.
And you'll get comments on it, and people will love it. Short story. Did I mention short? If it's a 10-minute story, people are going to click off and hate you. Just make sure it's a couple of 3 minutes at the most.
Well, on that note, it's time for us to go.
Ah, geez. What a story that is, Jen.
Until next time, I'm Jen Gluckow.
I'm Jeffrey Gittimer. I'm reminding you to get out there, tell your story, make the sale, even if your ass falls off.
I thought you were going to say happily ever after.
Oh.
This has been a presentation of the Sell or Die Network. For more podcasts that you can take out into the street and turn into money, visit SellorDieNetwork.com.